Hello and welcome to our UFC 323 post-fight show. I'm Ariel Helwani. It is 1:16 a.m. Eastern Time and the final UFC pay-per-view of 2025. The final UFC on ESPN pay-per-view. The final UFC pay-per-view ever has just wrapped up. God, we have a lot to talk about, my friends. We have a lot to talk about. Holy smokes, there is a brand new UFC bantamweight champion. His name is Piotr Jan. If you would have told me in March of 2023, after Merab Dvalishvili absolutely steamrolled, dominated, I mean, it was not even close. It was one-way traffic throughout. Remember that fight in Las Vegas, a fight night before Merab became champion? If you would have told me on that night that some 2.5 years later, they'd rematch, and Piotr Jan would fight Merab Dvalishvili the way in which he fought him tonight, and we'll get into it, but just to let you know what it was, in my opinion, it was 50-45 for Piotr Jan. Now, the judges didn't necessarily agree. There were two 49-46s, one 48-47, which is absurd. I thought at worst it was a 49-46. It was a very fun, entertaining fight, but this was vintage Piotr Jan. This was the Piotr Jan who was wrecking fools in his first run as UFC bantamweight champion. And imagine 4.5 years ago, he makes the critical mistake. He hits Aljamain Sterling with the illegal knee. 3.5 years ago, he loses to Aljo in the rematch via submission. 2.5 years ago, he loses to Merab. Now here he is, once again, the man in the bantamweight division. This is a guy who has been through a lot. He won 3 in a row to get back here. And it's a great, great performance, and it's a great win, and he won that title fair and square. Blown away by the performance. I mean, a masterclass, if you will, but it will forever be dissected and debated whether or not this was the Piotr Jan show or a little bit of a mistake on Merab Dvalishvili's part. Again, much dissected in its own right. 4 fights in 2025, the decision to come back so soon after the 5-round victory over Corey Sandhagen back in October. Did he take on too much? Too many weight cuts, too many rounds, too many minutes inside the octagon. Was this a mistake? And how much of that came into play here tonight in that performance? Because this was not the Merab that we have seen as of late. Failed many takedown attempts, looked tired, was getting beat up, was getting pieced on his feet. In fact, it looked like he was falling in love with the striking early on. And when I was watching that, I was thinking to myself, could this be part of his undoing? We shall talk about that and then some. Oh, by the way, there's a brand new UFC flyweight champion. He is the youngest champion in UFC history. His name is Joshua Van, the pride of Myanmar, the pride of Houston, Texas. But it was devastating. It was gutting. It was disgusting to watch. Very quickly in the fight, 26 seconds in, takedown. Alex Pantoja, the former champion, posts up and his elbow dislocates, and they showed it way too many times, 11, 12, 13. I don't know how many times they zoomed in, they super zoomed in. I thought it was a broken arm. Our good friend, Dr. Brian Suterer, told me it was a dislocated elbow based on what he saw. The question is, does Pantoja need surgery or not? Either way, he's going to be out several months. It was gruesome. It was disgusting. It was a horrible way to end a title fight. It lasted just 26 seconds. We never got it going. We never got to actually see these two great fighters compete. Heartbreaking stuff. But as a result, Joshua Van now becomes the second youngest champion in the history of the UFC. Obviously, the youngest flyweight champion ever. The man who still holds the record. Youngest champion, John Jones, 23. But unbelievable. Unbelievable turn of events. Peyton Talbot beat Henry Cejudo. Tatsuro Taira beat Brandon Moreno, somewhat controversially. A lot to discuss in a very entertaining final UFC on ESPN pay-per-view. It was UFC 323. I don't talk about these by myself, of course, when there's a pay-per-view. Three-pack unites also for the final time in a sort of like 1 a.m. slot here because, again, starting next year with 324, these bad boys are going to begin at 9 p.m. Eastern time. And that is good news for us on the East Coast, but it's especially good news for those overseas. We'll get to that man in a moment. But first, Mayor of the Nutmeg State, the man in the hat, Chuck Mindendahl, is here with us. Chuck, how are you?
I am well, my friend. And my God, I feel like there's like a billion things to talk about off of this, don't you? I mean, that was like a masterclass performance. I'm really blown away by it.
It really was. I mean, the prelims were fantastic. A lot of finishes, a lot of great performances. And yes, many, many layers, especially when it comes to the main card and those top fights that I just mentioned. But let's not leave the patron saint of the Emerald Isle, the host of the critically acclaimed podcast, The Crack, the one and only PT Carroll, who I know is happier than all of us that he will now get to do these post shows at least an hour earlier starting next year. PT, what is The Crack?
The crack is very good. I mean, what a way to finish off.
It's tough,
off
PT.
The air.
It's tough. Mute. I can't believe it. It's tough. It's it is six. It's early.
If this started an hour before, this would never happen.
Yeah,
you know? No, I just want to guarantee moving forward with the new time that will never happen again, ladies and gentlemen.
It's tough. What did you say there, though? Because I saw
I was going to say it was probably moving.
Yeah, I thought the card was great. Just apart from, obviously, the flyweight title fight, I mean, I feel sorry for everyone involved in that. Even Van is going to be constantly ridiculed. Even though he had nothing to do with that, even though it's a freak incident, I kind of come away from that fight feeling sorry for everyone. But what a masterclass from Piotr Jan, that main event. Unbelievable.
Yeah, it was very reminiscent to, Anderson Silva versus Chris Weidman, Chris Weidman versus Uriah Hall, where you kind of feel sick afterwards and you don't know if you really want to keep watching after seeing something like that. And Chris Weidman was scrutinized for the way in which he celebrated. We'll get to that fight in a moment. But first, let's talk about the main event. And Chuck, I think it was going into the fifth round, you tweeted this: "I'm torn if this is a masterclass by Jan or if it's just sheer dogness of will or if it's both, but this is one hell of a showing." You tweeted that. I would also add to that, is it that? Is it A? Is it B? Or is it C? Was it a huge mistake on Merab Dvalishvili's part? I bring that up not to say that I want to take anything away from Jan. I was blown away by the performance. But it was lingering in my brain the entire time. What happens if this fight was taking place in February as opposed to December the 6th?
Yeah, and I think that, you know, hearing Merab, you know, at the end there basically saying, like, I wanted to put on an entertaining fight, you know? And you kind of go back and you think about that first round, and you're like, well, he was in there. It wasn't like he was, he had to get clocked really good before he was like, okay, I better stop messing around. I better try for the takedown. But it felt like a tempo had been set early on in that fight. And Jan, who I think is one of those guys who kind of adjusts and gets comfortable in there, you could see that he was already feeling pretty good about himself by the time that those takedown attempts started to come in. So it was just a very strange, you know, I wasn't expecting Merab to have terms dictated to him. And I think that's so when you have something like that, an astonishing development through the course of a fight, it always takes on this extra, like, oh my God, what are we watching? I used to love that about, you know, in the old days when Twitter was still fun and like people would be like, what are we watching right now? This one had that feel to it because I don't think many of us gave Jan much of a chance. If the fight was going to go into the championship round, even third round, I think that the consensus was that would be Merab's fight, right? Like that he would be then pulling away because he has the cardio, we've seen it. But to see the way those final rounds played out and just Jan getting better, stuffing the takedowns, landing the bigger shots, you know, getting a takedown at the very end, just like, hey, I'm still here after all this. I mean, that was pretty crazy, man. It was one of those special ones that I think we like to be a little shocked sometimes, and this one certainly did that for me.
BT.
It was as though Jan wasn't throwing out feelers at all at any point. In the first fight, I think you learned that this guy's going to suffocate me. If he can get close to me, he's going to grab something on me and just force me into a grappling exchange. I think the thing that's really noticeable about this fight from Jan's point of view is he hurts Merab in nearly every round. I think the only round where Merab is not visibly shook by a shot is the second. He was hitting his body so often, it was like a button at some stage. Like he was hitting him in the liver so many times, you'd see him drop down immediately. In the first round, there was a big right hand. I just think he used every gap that he was given today. He wasn't trying to implement the game plan. He was just trying to hurt Merab. And look at the guy's face. After one round, he had really damaged him. And then obviously the work to the body later on as well. To make Merab be chasing a fight like that in the final round is something we've never seen before. And like you, I gave Merab the second round. But I think I was being generous even then. I think it was like, it's a close round. I think I'm going with him with this one. But he's chasing the fight and you're in the fifth thinking he needs a finish here. And that's something that we have not said about Merab in a very long time. And if there's one criticism to him, it's that he does go the distance. It's that he doesn't finish when possibly he can. He was forced to look for a finish in that fifth, and Jan was just too good.
Yeah, I mean, it really is amazing. And you're right, Chuck, it did feel like sort of an afterthought. It felt like the story going into this fight was, while we did talk a little bit about the decision to come back so soon, you know, four fights in the calendar year, five fights dating back to September of last year. If he wins, he's the fighter of the year. There was so much to discuss and celebrate as it pertains to Merab. And also, oh, by the way, he beat this guy 2.5 years ago and it wasn't close at all. Like, there was no great demand to see these two fight again. It really was because there was no one left for him to fight. He had beaten everyone and some guys he had beaten twice. And so, you know, Jan was the next man up. They needed a main event for this card. He was happy to do it. He was so happy when, you know, he learned on the show. It was amazing to see that a guy would want to return so soon. It kind of felt like Jan was a bit of a bit player in all of this. And then from the get-go, you know, you look at the stats, it's kind of wild. And I don't know how much stock to put in these stats, and I'll tell you why in a moment. But, you know, if you look at the stats, Merab lands more total strikes, more significant strikes, more headshots, more body shots, but it was the way in which Jan landed those strikes, the damage that he inflicted, in particular when it came to the body. I mean, those leg kicks, excuse me, those kicks to the body and those body punches, God, yeah. Those liver kicks is what I should have said, were just absolutely brutal. And to see Merab wince like that, to feel the pain that he was in, was really a sight to see. Like, we had never quite seen. This is a guy who has lost before in the UFC, Merab, so he hasn't been invincible, but he has not lost going into this fight. 14 straight fights, an incredible run. To see him get bloodied up, beat up, cut up like this by a guy that he beat so convincingly 2.5 years ago, and I know that Jan was injured and all that stuff and more. It was really just a virtuoso masterclass performance. I don't know how many times we've been faced with this scenario, but it's one of the best performances by a challenger in a title fight, but also challenger in a title fight in which he lost the first fight so convincingly. Like, you don't usually figure out the puzzle that easily, and he did that and then some, Chuck.
Yeah, I mean, usually when you lose a fight like that, we've seen it a million times, like, it kind of goes the same pattern, you know? If they do end up fighting again, just really, I mean, it's just one of those types of things. You're like, he felt, you know, sometimes NBA franchise or NFL franchise, like, kind of, there's a team in their division or whatever, and so they restructure, like, it's all about beating that team. That's all that matters. All the rest of the team, it doesn't matter. It's just about beating that one team. It felt like that he had Merab in his crosshairs all of this time. All he's been wanting to get is get back into this moment, and he was going to do everything to fix whatever he did wrong the first time. That's what it felt like. It felt like whatever he thought, like, okay, Merab does this, he does this. I need to shut this down. I need to hit him here. I need to do this. I need to get to the body. Like, it felt like he was just completely dialed in. If there was any surprise, it was probably that Merab did stand with him as long as he did in some of the circumstances. But the craziest thing is, you know, he's a machine, right? We call him the machine. We think he's as good as he is because he has been this good, but he's a human being. He was taking some of those shots, and there's a little bit of you that's like, my God, we kind of just look right past it because we think, oh, this dude's he's invincible or whatever the next thing closest to that. But some of those shots he absorbed and kept coming back from after screaming out in pain, and just, they would have just crippled anybody else. You know, I feel like anybody else is done. They get finished in that fight. Merab standing in there to the end too, that deserves some kudos, man. That he took a beating in that fight, and I don't think that Jan at any point was really in any kind of heavy trouble there.
Oh yeah, those body shots would cripple and like crumple most people. The stat that I just wanted to bring up, PT, real quick, is that they have Merab listed as attempting 29 takedowns. When did we get so like loosey-goosey with the takedown attempts? I don't think that was 29 takedowns. Am I off here? He definitely got stuffed a bunch, but 29 seems a little excessive.
I think, like, he's in on a single, and they're kind of counting that as a takedown attempt as well. But I don't even think, and we talked about this, we've been talking about this throughout his round, I don't think he's necessarily, he is using these takedowns as a feint, essentially. He is just trying to exhaust people, and really, like, a takedown attempt, I don't know, I'm kind of with you. I saw you tweeting about this, I think it was in the second round, you're like, 18 takedown attempts already? Like, what are we watching here? I agree with you on that. But it's, you know, there is, like, look, you talked about at the top of the show when the four title defenses in a year, there is an element that, like, we have to pay homage to Merab here because He is kind of like Icarus flying too close to the sun here, you know, trying to fit this, break this record. And something that was going through my head as I was watching Ariel was what O'Malley said to you. Sean O'Malley went on your show and said, I've been noticing this guy getting a lot more striking exchanges than he used to.
Mm-hmm.
Like when we used to watch Merab fight, you couldn't strike with him because he was just suffocating your work all the time. He has improved so much in striking, but I agree with O'Malley in that could be his downfall. You know, like Chuck mentioned there, he is in striking exchanges in this fight a lot more than he usually would be. Jan has a lot more opportunity. As I've said at the top, you can see from his face, you can see from the reactions to his body and audible screams when he's being kicked in the body that this is affecting him. Like you cannot discount he is giving Jan a lot more opportunities here than he did in the first fight. And against Sandhagen and in other fights, he's been striking a lot more than what got him to the dance, essentially.
Doesn't it seem like they kind of give him, like, you know, the takedown attempts because he's a sequence fighter. Like, he kind of goes in there, he's like a dog, yeah. He just keeps trying again and again. So it's almost like a buckshot versus a single shot, right? Like there's all the, they kind of, oh, that was 6 takedown attempts, even though it was really just one sequence. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's what it seems like they're doing. But it's really that nobody has been that maniacal with that kind of, you know, with that kind of game plan where you're just like, they mentioned on the telecast, like, nobody goes from a defensive posture into offense as quickly as he does, like, and just kind of jumping in the space and kind of grabbing a leg. And he'll do that 2 or 3 times within a few seconds. And I guess they're now breaking those into individual takedown attempts, right?
Chuck, you know, the thing is, he said something at the very end there in his post-fight interview, Merab did, about, you know, I'm just happy that Dana White is happy. I'm happy to be a company man. I'm happy to perform for the fans and entertain. And then you couple that with what PT just said about what, you know, Sugar had noted and about the way in which he fought this fight and the decision to come back so soon, maybe thinking like, hey, because let's be honest, there was a time not that long ago the UFC wanted nothing to do with Merab fighting for a belt.
Right.
And there was a time not that long ago that the moment he would have lost that belt, they were going to part ways with him. They just did not like being in business with him. They thought he was silly, that he would do stupid things, that he would post stupid things, that he didn't have a fan-friendly style. And I can't help but feel that this desire to be loved and appreciated kind of was part of the undoing here. You know, look, hindsight is 20/20, but he should have not fought this fight. Like, it was too soon. Since the last time Petr Yan fought over the summer, this man was in a war with Corey Sandhagen in between that time. You know, it was 2 months ago. And again, hindsight 2020, I'm not trying to take anything away from Petr Yan, but he is going to have to live with this. Now, he did bring up in the post-fight interview, like, I want another crack. And I believe very strongly, I saw the boys who did a great job during the watch party debate this at the very end. I believe very strongly there should be a third go around here. I mean, he beat him so convincingly the first time. The second time was a tremendous fight. Why wouldn't there be a third go around? The question is, would that be Jan's next fight and would that be Merab's next fight? Or does Merab need an extended time off, have Jan go do something else, and one suspects if Umar Nurmagomedov wins, they do that one? Or do you just try to, you know, book these guys in 6 or so months and do it right away?
You know, the thing I thought, when I agree with everything you said about when he was doing that interview and he's like, I just wanted to be entertaining, you know, and I was like, man, I felt the exact same thing you're talking about, where you're like, this guy was trying to, you know, put an exclamation mark on the year that he owned, but he wanted to do it in the way the UFC would see him and the fans would see him in this certain way, and it might have cost him. And this was the big red flag, was just the weight cuts. And like, with the age, 34 years old is not very young, especially for a guy who's fought as frequently as him. There were some red flags there for him going into this fight, man. I don't know. I don't know if they'll do, like, here's my thing. Like, if he lost this fight, I was a little bit like, will they run it back even before it happened because of the things you mentioned about the UFC not like him as much? I felt like there's been a thawing over this year where they like him a lot better, obviously. But do they really want to put him back in there that quickly? I don't know.
No, I don't know. I don't know. Hey, by the way, PT, I'm seeing our boy Oven tweeting this. If and he's right, if Sugar wins on January 24th,
yes.
Sugar versus Jan at the White House seems like... Finally.
This is what I'm saying. Yes, that's what I'm getting at. Like,
yeah, I forgot about that one. That seems like a perfect White House fight, right?
That gets the juices flowing, boys.
Yeah.
That's the fight.
Yeah.
Right?
That's what's going to happen.
Want to see 5 rounds of that shit. I'm sorry, Merab, okay? Do whatever you need to do, but if that fight is there after January 24th, they have to do it. Ever since that fight happened the first time, I thought Jan won the first fight. Oh my, look, this was a big debate at the time. It was like the Diaz and Condit of that era. And 5 rounds is what we need to see in that fight.
What a carousel would be if O'Malley went and beat him, right? It would be like, here we go.
By the way, I feel like Umar Nurmagomedov is super happy right now. Sean O'Malley is super happy right now. Heck, Corey Sandhagen is happy right now. All these dudes are happy. The only guy I think who's probably not too happy is Ayman Zahabi, because it felt like he might be next as a result of the fact that Merab has beaten all those guys. Now
you've
he goes
got Merab
like,
now, Ayman.
Yeah, not for the belt. But do you guys agree?
Oh, that'd be PT, the worst.
Do you agree that he deserves a third crack? I'm not going to debate here whether or not he's going to get it, because he probably isn't anytime soon. But if we're talking about fairness, and I know we're often not, he gave him a rematch after thoroughly beating him up 2.5 years ago. It was never even close, that fight. Like, that was a boring fight. You remember that fight at the Palms? Yeah, it was incredibly boring.
Yeah, we can say who we think deserves the fight, but that's not what the UFC are going to go with. Like, we've established that. We know that at this point. If Sean O'Malley wins this fight, you call him the biggest North American star in the sport right now. Of course they're going to go with that. Of course they are. Let's not be silly here. I think Merab deserves a third crack, and I still think both of those things can happen. I think Merab needs some time off now. Like, what he did this year is crazy. It was going to be history, 4 title defenses in a year, but it really does tax your body making this weight so many times. The older you get at those lower weight classes, you've got a shorter lifespan in those lower weight classes. You see the heavyweights getting into their elder years and having success, but in the lighter weights, I do think you need that time. So I think you can do both things here. You can do the O'Malley, fight next, and then send Merab back in for the title afterwards.
Can I just ask you guys this straight up, though? Did you feel like he came out flat? Remember when we were talking about this Donald Cerrone, when he fought the 5th time in a year against, I think, Nate Diaz, right? Yeah. You could tell, obviously, that he was not himself. Like, did you have a moment in this fight where you were, like, watching it and saying, like, dude, he doesn't look like Merab, you know, like, something's flat here?
I will be honest, when I saw him striking so much early on and not attempting a takedown, and then shortly thereafter the broadcast said, Merab hasn't attempted a takedown yet, I was thinking, oh no, like, just something feels a little bit different about this. He's usually a lot more focused on the takedown, a lot more relentless. Saw that video pop up on social media that he sparred today. A member of his team posted that he was sparring without headgear. And I know that's kind of commonplace for him, but like, all this stuff adds up. You know, all this stuff adds up. It gets you. And here's Jan fresh as a daisy coming out and has the benefit of seeing maybe the best of Merab. That's the other thing. Like, Jan saw the best of Merab 2.5 years ago, and I know he's evolved and he's become a much better striker. No doubt about it, working with John Wood and company in Las Vegas. But Merab never saw the best of Jan. That was a very injured Piotr Jan who was nowhere near his best, and so he probably had an advantage there. So yes, it just seemed like a different version of him. But we have been used to seeing him, guys, you know, go down 2 rounds and then pick it back up. And so I was kind of waiting. Post third round, though, I scored it 50-45. I mean, we could talk about the judges' scorecards here real quick. I don't know how interesting it is, but I scored it 50-45. And I thought after the third round that it was just not looking good for him. Mike Bell gave the first round to Merab. Derek clearly gave the all three gave the first round to Merab, which I thought the second round was the one that they might have given it to him, and Derek Cleary gave him the second. So Derek clearly had Merab up 2-0 going into the third, which is very surprising. And then, as you could see, the rest all gave 3-4-5 to Piotr Jan. So no huge controversy, although that 48-47.
Yes, Merab winning the fight, for God's sake. You know what I mean? So let's not talk about these judges here. Rick losing his mind on this broadcast.
Really?
I mean, that's what I saw. Call me crazy. Am I wrong, Frank? Am I saying the wrong thing about New York?
Right. And towards the end of it, he was like, okay, look, my scorecard doesn't actually match reality. It's like
him and Daniel Cormier.
Well, it's a long day, in fairness to the boys. I tuned in just after the van situation. I know we're going to talk to it later, but it was like, you know, tough moment. But look. Let's get back to these scorecards. Sorry, Ari.
No. Listen, I was curious. I was going to ask him. Shout out to Danny Rubenstein, manager, who had two fighters here fighting. Very rare. He represents both guys. And I meant to text him and ask him. Yeah, he represents Jan, one of his first clients, and Marab as well. And I meant to text him how he was scoring this, and I can't imagine the emotions.
Shout out Sayat, well.
Watching two guys. Yeah, Sayat though is just with Jan. So there's some guys that Sayat just we're getting to the weeds of the Ruby fight team here, but Sayat is just with those guys. Danny is the head honcho, who oversees all of them. But they've got a great thing going over there. Maybe Shafkat fighting for the belt in 2026. Nevertheless, that's got to be tough for a manager, and I was curious how he was scoring it. But in the end, there's no real controversy there, and I would love to see them fight again. I think Marab deserves that. Here's my point, guys. The next time Marab fights, I think it should be for the belt.
Yeah.
The next time Jan fights, I don't think it will be against Marab. He needs an extent. If someone around him loves him and he's willing to listen to them, tell him to take some time off. I'm just not quite sure, ultimately, like you guys said, whether or not he'll get that. Although it does feel like even that moment there with Dana and Hunter, it does feel like they are warming up to Marab and appreciate him. I don't know why they wouldn't like him at this point. He does everything for them and then some, and I think is an entertaining fighter, but it would be a shame if he never gets another. Oh my God, that's the first thing I thought of, by the way.
I thought about this, man, because he goes out there and he's shaking hands, and I saw Hunter, he was looking at his hand right after, like,
first thing I thought, and I actually saw someone give Dana the wipes right after, and he laughed. Like, it seemed to me like the thought, fair play, the thought didn't even cross Dana's mind. I mean, I would go for the old fashioned, like, air fist bump, like, yeah, man, oh, I just fell short. Like,
happened.
You know, like, right there,
it was wheezing blood all over everybody,
yeah. Man, what a time. I mean, we were just talking, like, one of the storylines heading into this fight is like Pantoja Marab, would they fight each other? Would Pantoja move up? Now here we are, guys.
Mate, what the fuck? Like, honestly, these
let's
two
get into it. Let's get into it. Guys, how about this? How about this cruel irony? Going into this fight, the fastest title fight in UFC flyweight history. Do you know what it was?
No.
32 seconds. Henry Cejudo versus TJ Dillashaw. Wow, main event of the first UFC on ESPN card. Here we are, final UFC on ESPN pay-per-view.
Crazy.
The new fastest, 26 seconds, but it's, I mean, much different, of course. Disgusting, gut-wrenching. I mean, basically what happens is there's a scramble. Pantoja is posting and his arm just snaps and the elbow is dislocated. What, Zach Candido, if you're listening, a little too many replays, buddy, all right? You're a tremendous producer, but whoever in the how did you guys even...
What other angles?
Yeah, and then it was like, shh, right in there, super zoom in. PT, what do you say about this? What do you say about it? You said you blew some chunks. What do you say about this?
It's sick, man. The replay was horrific. It was, and at every angle. I've seen that from every possible angle. I think the whole world did. Horrific. And it's just a big non-event, right? I know technically Van has won here. He's done nothing wrong here, but it's just, there is no sense of anything happening here. And for the, as long as it lasted, the 20 seconds or whatever, Pantoja was bulling them down. And I was like, this is going to be fucking tremendous. This is going to be amazing. And then this weird thing happens. He catches his leg. He sends him backwards. And you just, as soon as Pantoja's face is revealed to the world, you see this look on his face. And you're like, oh, the fight's over.
It's awful.
It is absolutely soul-destroying, man. Like,
and then you're bracing because they're going to, something's going to be gruesome about this. Because the way he was holding his arm, I'm like, oh, no, what is this, you know? And then it turned out as bad as it was, would look like.
It was horrific. It was horrific. I feel sorry for Van here because he's a brilliant fighter and we're all cheering him all the way up to this, but you just know he's going to get some very bad reactions from the fan base who probably had a few quid down on this fight going either way. And the two lads, of course, two of the best pound-for-pound fighters in the top two fights. It just feels like, it's technically a win, but the fight didn't happen. We did not see these guys fight, so it's a shitty kind of feeling for everyone.
You're absolutely right, though, man, about like the first 20 seconds, for what you can glean from something like that, just a very small sample size. Because coming into this, like, Van, just his kind of demeanor, you know, his attitude, his confidence, it was like, this is gonna be wild, because we were talking about this. We were saying that Pantoja goes in like a wild man, like he has nothing to protect, even though he's the champion. He goes in there and he tries to buzzsaw guys, and that's exactly what this looked like through those 20 seconds, wasn't it? It looked like they were just gonna go to war for as long as it lasted. It was just, it was setting up to be such a beautiful fight, man. What a bummer.
When Pantoja comes out to Many Men, like, I was so pumped. I was like, all right, this is, this is incredible. I know, Tyra sitting there. There's a guy looming over, although I think it should be Tyra versus Horiguchi. We could talk about that in a moment. But still, it felt like there were massive stakes. Pantoja's coming out. And then it happened so quickly. I mean, we've had some, like I said, we've had some freak accidents in the octagon. The shot of his son crying, did you see that? Pantoja's son consoling his dad. And I was about to tweet it, but I knew it could have been misconstrued. What I did tweet and then ultimately deleted, so well done on my part. I just wanted to say was, Van needs to be very careful. This was before the post-fight interview. You need to be super careful in this moment. Now, it's very easy for me sitting at home, judging everything, watching, saying like, just take the high road here. Be gracious. Be humble. Say this is not how you want to win. You'll defend the title against him. It was not how anyone wanted the fight to go. And you know that there's going to be people scrutinizing every single word, every smile, every celebration. But you also have to remember, this guy is coming from a war-torn country. His family immigrants. He wants to buy his mom a house. He wants to make her life better. He can't help but be happy. He's 24. But inevitably you saw people criticizing the reaction. What do you do in that moment? Because remember Chris Weidman back at UFC 168, right? People killed Weidman, killed him. But these guys, like, they just think, okay, I won. What do you want me to do?
And it is part of the game. It's an emotional game, but it is part of the game. A guy can get hurt. I can guarantee you, in any kind of reflection, even for a 24-year-old kid, you know, and then you try to imagine yourself at 24 years old in a situation like that, and you're like, man, I don't know. Like, I wouldn't even have, you know, any grace in that sort of situation, I'm sure. But how did you think he did? I mean, honestly, I didn't think he was egregious.
Fine. I think he was fine. Mean, like, I saw a bunch of people criticizing him. I'm not going to lie. I was looking on Twitter. I was seeing.
That was always going to come.
His mom is there. He gives her the belt. Like, this is his dream. Would I have loved to have seen like a, hey, you know, hey man, you know, that when you're ready, I would love to do it. And I think he was, but it's tough. He's 24. English isn't necessarily his first language. Like, this is all very new to him. And I thought he did fine. You know? Yeah, I'm not going to sit here and criticize him.
Did I just win the belt? Like, it's like if you hit a jackpot or something, you're like, oh my God, did I just win? I mean, that's going to be a lot of emotions you're processing in that 30 seconds, you know?
Here's the question, though. We don't. By the way, the post-fight show, apparently, I'm seeing online, they're saying it was his shoulder, that it was Pantoja's shoulder. I mean, I think it's pretty clear it was his elbow, right?
It looked like it was toying and not at his elbow. Like, like that from the back.
And even the great Brian Suter are telling me that it was his elbow, a dislocated elbow. I thought it was a broken arm. Oh. That's how much I know about all of this. This is a post here from Alex Pantoja saying, I've been through worse. I'll come back even stronger. You can be sure of that. Thank you for the messages. And so we don't know when he's going to come back. They had Tyra there. You saw Tyra's face like, oh my God, here I am, so close. PT, what do you think? Do you think they do Tyra versus Van? And whenever, I think unlike the Merab situation, we can be sure that whenever Pantoja is ready to come back, he's getting a title fight.
Yeah.
The question is, will Van's next fight be for the belt? Because for those that don't know, we didn't get through all the results already. Tyra's fight was a quick one as well. It lasted, 224 into the second round, but still, it didn't seem like he took a ton of damage. He looked very good, dominant. We'll get to more about that fight in a moment. Do you think they do Tyra versus Van? Do you think they do Horiguchi versus Van? Or do you think they keep Van on the sidelines and wait for Pantoja to come back?
This is the thing, right? Like, we have to be very aware of recency bias here because we're all guilty of it after these events. Think about how high we were on Horiguchi after his comeback win. He was an underdog. He came out, had a brilliant performance. And of course, a part of the build was these two guys, teammates. And we were thinking, oh, the UFC are going to love this. Horiguchi is rubbing his hands together to fight his good mate Pantoja. But this makes it a lot neater. Like, I don't know why you wouldn't put Horiguchi in there against Van if you're going to do this, and then Tyra afterwards. We have it's a very good problem the UFC suddenly have, because suddenly everything's interesting again. Once, like, you know, when you were in the Pantoja era, it was just a lot of guys that you've lapped, essentially, and Horiguchi and Van were new guys, and then Tyra was a new guy, but this feels completely new. I agree with you, whenever Pantoja's back, let him in, but I don't think it's cut and dry with Tyra. I think Horiguchi is definitely in there. He's an older guy as well. I think Tyra has a lot more tread in the tires than him. I think he is definitely at play for the first shot against Van.
What
and the
think,
revenge
Jeff?
Angle as well. The ATT revenge yeah. angle. Come on. Mm-hmm. We can work that.
That's a good point.
Was it a dislocated elbow that Jaden Daniels had, like the commander's
actually the exact same thing. Exactly.
That's what
same
I was
thing.
Just thinking because yep. he's actually yep. coming back this week. That's not that long. Sometimes you're just not sure on injuries like this if it ends up being the same thing.
100%. Yeah, he told me, by the way, the doctor said that you could avoid surgery, and if you avoid surgery, then it, you know, you're not out for 8-9 months. It's right. it's a lot better than obviously the leg kicks that I'm talking about, you know, the breaks that Weidman and Silva dealt with a few years back.
Well, sorry, I feel like he's got a chance. You. No, I just feel like I feel like he's got it. Maybe he won't be out as long as we're thinking. I mean, it just looks super nasty, like it's something you don't like to see. But sometimes those things can be a little bit deceiving, especially in the Jaden Daniels thing. So maybe he comes back sooner.
Yeah, the thing worth noting is Pantoja is 35. So, you know, the way your body recovers. And, I mean, the guy had looked so good. It's really devastating because really as of late, like his performances against Kaikar France and Asakura in particular, even Ersic, like he just, he had such a killer instinct. He was so fun to watch, so aggressive out there. I equated him to a boa constrictor on the mat. Yeah, like he was really growing into being a champion. And I mean, what an awful, awful way. One of the worst ways that we've seen someone lose a belt. Just an awful, awful way. I mean, one of the worst, like just a complete freak accident. The fight hardly gets going. I personally
How does that
think
affect the pound for pound rankings. You know what I mean? Like it's like so you get a guy who like you didn't do anything wrong. You just got hurt.
Classic. Of course, this is the first thing that you think about, Chuck, because this is your baby, right?
Write this. Yeah, it's like yeah, what am I gonna write about?
That is a doozy.
I'm freaking about sending this list in tomorrow. Now I don't know what to do. Oh,
can I just say I would love to see? Let's see Horiguchi Van and.
Yeah.
I mentioned when Tyra won, I said, could you imagine Tyra versus Horiguchi in Japan? And I think a lot of people who don't know who Horiguchi is, who don't remember his UFC run that he left on a 3-fight winning streak, that he was Bellator Ryzen champion, all this stuff, were like, what? Tyra, of course, has to be next. Now, Horiguchi is a much more accomplished fighter. And oh, by the way, supremely famous over in Japan and popular. Yeah. Like this guy posts anything and the thing explodes. If you do Horiguchi versus Van, and let's just say Horiguchi wins, you're looking at a potential Horiguchi versus Tyra title fight in Japan. How huge is that? That's never happened.
We're going to that if that happens. Say
oh, my God.
We are going if that happens.
In Saitama, never been a Japanese-born champion, and then you have two Japanese fighters fighting potential. Like, oh, my God.
It would also be fun because that would have to be that would have to be like the oldest versus the youngest guy in the division, too, right? Like, I just feel like that they're both
And I'm not. And by the way, I'm not trying to, like, discount Van and all this. He can smoke, you know, all of them. But I just feel like Horiguchi has done enough to earn it. And you do have that ATT angle. If he wins, then of course Pantoja's ready to come back. That's the one that makes a little bit more sense to me. In case you're wondering, as far as the flyweight rankings are concerned, they had Van listed as one, Moreno, who lost to Tyra, as two, and then you've got Royval, who's three, who's fighting next weekend in the final UFC on ESPN fight. That's the main event of next weekend's card, against Manel Kapp, who is six, Albazi, Tyra, five. Tyra's going to move up. I don't think Royval versus Kapp winner gets the title shot, right? It seems to me like it would be down to Tyra versus Tyra or Horiguchi, but I don't know. I mean, Van winning the belt now opens it up for a lot of people. I mean, Royval just lost to him in June, but I mean, Diego Lopez just lost to Alex Volkanovski, and he's getting a title shot, so who the hell knows?
Don't get me started.
Horiguchi, though, like, I mean, in terms of people not thinking he's earned it, he's won every belt apart from the UFC belt, and he did contest a fight for the UFC belt. Like, that's another angle here. Like, he's coming back last shot at UFC gold. He was a Ryzen champion. He was Bellator champion. This guy is a savage. Like, one of the great fighters at flyweight ever. Like, it's an opportunity they shouldn't pass up because it doesn't come around that often. Like, he also verifies Van in a way that Tyra can't. Like, a win over Horiguchi, I always say it's like Highlander. You take part of their legacy when you defeat him. From Van's point of view, the bigger scalp is Horiguchi.
I really feel bad for Pantoja. That was awful. That was really awful.
Shit.
It was Theismann-esque.
Yeah, it was.
You know that reference?
Yeah. Oh, I do. Lawrence Taylor. Monday Night Football.
PT has no idea. PT has before your time watching.
I know who Lawrence Taylor is. He was in some movies or something I'm aware of.
Lawrence Taylor? Was he in some movies?
No, that was O.J. Simpson.
That was O.J. Simpson.
Oh, man.
He was in some movies. He was in Any Given Sunday with Al Pacino. Boom.
Lawrence Taylor?
He's a cinephile, if that's what you mean. He does like watching movies.
All right. By the way.
Waterboy on Air Jordan just told me. How do you not know this?
Wow.
Waterboy.
Oh, yeah. Air Jordan is feeding you the intel.
That's true, isn't it?
Thank you, Jordan.
That's crazy. Rob Dwalishvili versus Peter Yan, fight of the night. Joshua Vant just showed up looking very dapper to the post-fight press conference, and he showed up with a toy UFC belt, like one of the ones that like a kid would have, because he said that the real belt was too heavy for him. So that is pretty incredible stuff.
That's great.
I love it.
Legit, it's like sitting in front of him, and it looks tiny. It's unbelievable. Regarding the injury, this is from UFC News, aside from eye injuries, pokes, cuts, etc. And by the way, what a stretch for weird finishes and title fights.
Yeah.
thankfully, and I will get to this in a moment, no one really claiming that Pantoja quit. Alex Not Pantoja's yet. Injury was just the third injury in UFC history to halt a UFC title fight. It joins Patrick Cote's knee injury versus Anderson Silva and Anderson Silva's leg injury versus Chris Weidman.
Wow.
That's pretty crazy. Yeah, seemed very unique. A front runner for perhaps one of the worst tweets of the night goes to the great Dominic Cruz, who tweeted, "I wish that Van versus Pantoja fight was allowed, A-L-O-U-D. That should disqualify the tweet from that point forward.
Come on, anyway, that is definitely not the worst keep part going. Of this tweet.
It should be up to us as the fighter if we want to continue after that. We put the time in, the training camp in that situation. People dislocate their arms and put it back in place and keep fighting all the time. Oh, man, this ain't the hill to die on. This ain't the one to tweet about.
So the ref should have been, in this case, Pantoja's down, clutching his arm, going, no.
He's like, no, I'm done.
Van just smash him. Hey, Wait, do you want to keep going? Do you want to keep going?
Fuck it out. Oh, man. Is it Monty Python when it's like he's got, it's just a flesh wound, you know, and he's like, he's bleeding, he's missing his leg. That's what that reminds me of. It's
I don't know what he's saying about?
What is he saying here? Like you would give them a chance to go into their corner and someone pops the arm back in and then you go, off you go again. Is that what he's saying?
No, man. Credit to Van for not punching him in that state, because some other people would have, and clearly Dom would have wanted that.
Joe Rogan was very happy with that move. He must have mentioned it.
Yes. For the record, Van, 24 years, 1 month, and 27 days old. John Jones was 23 years, 8 months, and 1 day old. So, if my math is correct, he was only like 5 months off. Amazingly, right?
But still,
math is correct. Something like that.
Who's to check?
Yeah, who is to check? Who is to check?
Thanks, Frank. Still at it at this hour. This is magic.
Yes. We love that. Tweet here from Aljamain Sterling. Congrats to Yan and his team. They fought well tonight and made great adjustments. I can't wait to watch it back with Marab and plan for the comeback. Some things looked a little off, but maybe that was what Yan was doing? We'll take a look, heal up, and go again. This is the journey of a fighter. I hope you all enjoyed the battle. Until next time. 14 in a row for Marab. Now snapped. He is no longer the UFC bantamweight champion. By the way, you know, we seemingly do it all around these parts. I was able to put up a poll while you guys were talking on the YouTube chat. Thumbs up to the chat. We love you all. Thank you for the support. Hit the like, hit the subscribe, hit all those things. I asked, and I went like lowercase. I didn't have time to like fancy it up with, you know, capitals and all that. I even fucked it up. I wrote, who should fight Van next? Okay, that's not bad. Or maybe it should be, who should Van fight next? Who should fight Van next? I was doing it fast. I was literally like
it's wrong. Just not to give him Cruz abuse too. I mean, this is bad. Go ahead.
Horiguchi, 19%. Tyra, 45%. Pantoja, 36%. So there you have it.
We all need to take a breath. The recency bias. As I say, you were drunk on recency bias right now. We are pissed. You know what I mean? You gotta really step away from the computer for a day or so and then think about it again.
But let's talk about Tyra. Let's talk about Tyra, guys. He beats Brandon Moreno. Great win for him. Best win of his career, right? I mean, a very impressive win. He's back on track. He stumbled last year. Beats the former champion, very popular fighter. Wins via TKO, ground and pound. He has back mount. He's raining down blows. Mark Smith, the referee, who had a bit of a mare earlier in the night, Chuck. Some said it was premature. Some didn't like the stoppage. The broadcast actually was very vocal about thinking that Brandon Moreno needed a little bit more time. What do you think of the performance? What do you think of the stoppage?
I thought the performance was really, it was a good one for him because that first round really couldn't have gone, I mean, it could have gone worse, but like he was in a bad position there for the bulk of the round and he was very poised in waiting to get out of it. And once he finally did, it, from that point on and going into the second round, he took over the fight. I felt like that was as poised as we've seen him. We know his quicks. We know that he's got some power. So it's like it was fun to watch him kind of look more mature, I guess, in a fight like this, because you know Moreno is going to bring it. But as far as the, you know, that stoppage, I could see him leaning in, but it's weird because as Moreno's on the floor, he's still, you know, he's still covering up, but you can see he's trying to figure out a way to kind of get to his knees or get out of that. And I'm always like, it's always that moment where I'm like, man, I don't envy the job, but because I'm like, I probably would stop it very similar to that, but you might give it another second or two. But honestly, I don't really think it was controversial because he looked like he wasn't going to, it didn't look like he was getting out of that position anytime soon, right? And once you kind of turtle up a couple of times, it's very difficult to make that call. And, you know, you posted something there that, I mean, it's nothing like the Sam Alvey thing, but it's like you see some of the other ones that are so egregious the other way, and you're always, I always take this above that. You know what I mean? Where they let a guy get killed in there like that.
What do you think, BT?
It's just a really hard position to get out of as well. Like to Moreno's point of view, you're getting flattened out. He's on your back and he's caving your head in. There's not a lot you can do from that position. I saw some people complaining about it, but I do feel if it had been allowed to go, it would just been prolonged the punches that he took. And of course, Moreno wanted to go, but really impressed by Tyra. Really, really impressed. His grappling looks amazing. And I think he's getting a lot more comfortable on the feet too. And he's in a horrible situation, as Chuck pointed out, in that triangle for 4.5 minutes. And I know it's not really ever on, but it's threatening to be on for 4.5 minutes. And that's
always funny to hear Joe Rogan like try to assess, is it tight? Is it there? It's dangerous. It's
Yeah. Anyway, it's sliding down his shin now. We can all see, man. His legs are completely limp. It's like but look, young fighters, that's a terrifying situation to be in. Like a world champion has you in a submission, or at least he is very close to having you in a submission. He had to stay extremely calm, and then he came out in the second and got that position. And once he got that position, he started caving in those shots. I was like, yeah, he's not getting out of here. And it's a huge scalp. Moreno, a former champion and a savage, like a guy who's looked really, really good recently too. I think Tyra is great.
Peyton Talbot reminded us earlier in the night that Henry Cejudo saved the flyweight division, and I really do think he did. If he would have lost that fight to TJ, I think they would have gotten rid of it. And so to see a card like this where you have a performance from a guy like Tyra, a performance from a guy like Josh Van, I know that it ended very unceremoniously, but he's obviously a star. And even having Moreno on there and having Pantoja, a guy who has come into his own, has become very popular. Great to see the flyweight division thriving. Great to see these performances. Great to see Tyra bounce back. He loses to Royval in October of last year, split decision, and you know it was a lesson for him, no doubt. Takes an extended period of time off. He returns in August, wins that fight, comes back with this performance. Very, very impressive stuff. For me, the fight that I was most locked into and like captivated by was Peyton Talbot versus Henry Cejudo. There was something about that fight, the element of Talbot getting this opportunity when I think no one thought these two would be matched against each other. Cejudo's retirement fight, knowing that Talbot had, you know, lost to Barcelos back in January and got, you know, worked on the ground, seeing the way in which he came back, seeing how Cejudo looked against Song, there was just, I had no idea. We knew of all the different kind of paths to victory, but I just had no idea how this would play out. It was extremely captivating. It was a lot of fun. It was very entertaining. I really, really enjoyed it. And I was blown away by Peyton Talbot in this fight, guys. I mean, seeing him take down Henry Cejudo multiple times. This is an Olympic gold medalist. You know his accolades. He scored 3 takedowns on him. He shot for 5. Seeing him take down Henry Cejudo twice in the first round, guys, Peyton Talbot had landed, according to the broadcast, 1 takedown in his last 5 fights. and he landed two in the first round against Henry Cejudo. And then just seeing the way in which Henry refused to quit, seeing him fight till the very end, you know, obviously he's someone who's a little bit polarizing. I hated seeing him ask for a bonus in his retirement fight. Golly, you would think by that point in one's career, especially with the belts won, that stuff would be somewhat, non-important yeah. to him. But just the whole fight, the whole scene was great. And this is kind of the way bookings should go. And you see the aftermath here, courtesy of Dana White's social media. This is kind of the way it should work. This is kind of, in some respects, it's not exactly a perfect analogy, Chuck, but this is John Cena Gunther next weekend. The old guy going out, old Yeller, as Talbot called Cejudo, should kind of lose to the younger guy. And they took a risk with this one because Cejudo could have easily won this fight. Right. But now I think you have a superstar in your hands as far as Peyton Talbot is concerned.
So many compelling elements, man. You mentioned it, but like Peyton Talbot, like his sense of like his, like reading the room, his sense of his own magnitude shows up, right? Because he gets this takedown, he puts his tongue out. Mm. This is the one thing, like, well, this is what a star does, right? Like a star does something like this, and you're like, because this is the one criticism we had against him, that, oh, he couldn't wrestle Barcelos. Look what Barcelos did to him. He's exposed. So he goes and he does something like that, not just once. He does it a couple of times in this fight. He really couldn't have showed, you know, just kind of, first of all, why he's hyped, why he's a star, and also just how good he really is. Like, I think he's a sponge. I think that's one of the reasons he gets, like, we saw him in that follow-up fight, whenever that was in the summer, and he had already looked vastly improved from the last time we've seen him. I think he's that kind of guy, very cerebral. But I tell you what, man, when you watch a guy like Cejudo, you know, going out, and I think I've been as vocal as anybody about how cringe he is and all this stuff, but to see kind of a display of heart, there's always something that gets me about this man. Like, there was a point, I think it was about a minute left in that, where he kind of grabs a single leg, and it's that last single leg, you know. He's trying one more time to like dump him on his back, and he can't get it. He just absorbed it. He's bleeding all over the place. His face is busted up. And you see that kind of thing, and I'm like, I don't know what it is, man. I think for me, that's the romance of the fight game, when you see a guy who has heart to the end like that, is going out on a shield and is doing everything in his power to get it done. Like, you take all that together, and it just made for like a really great fight, man.
Yeah, he's an absolute legend, Henry Cejudo. I think he's very underappreciated in terms of what he did in the octagon. A fantastic fighter and a brilliant fight tonight. It's a massive moment for Peyton Talbot, but it's a massive moment because he was fighting Henry Cejudo. I love how Talbot fights. He reminds me a little bit of McGregor, honestly, like with that rangy style coming in with the big backhand. And who are you saying was looking for a fight earlier? Who's the odd man out? Ayman Zahabi? Ooh. That sounds like a good fight to me. Mm. Peyton Talbot v. Ayman Zahabi. Light that up.
That is a tremendous idea. By the way, Cejudo was ranked 10. We're going to
do this, Petey.
Yes,
we're gonna start.
We're gonna all of a sudden put him into these comments. I'm like, if you beat Cejudo, this is gonna all of a sudden be like, okay, Peyton Talbot's now in the top space here. We got, you know, I knew 100%.
I mean, Cejudo is ranked 10th, and believe it or not, Peyton is not ranked, and Zahabi is ranked 7th. I mean, I could see, honestly, I could see a Zahabi fight. I could see a Chito Vera fight. I know he's fallen on a bit of hard times. Batista would be a tough one. Obviously, Figueiredo and Umar are about to fight Song Yadong and O'Malley, but I think he's in that mix. And I think there's a strong desire at some point soon to see him fight Sean O'Malley. Obviously, if Sean O'Malley wins, he might get put into that title picture, but would love to see that at some point as well. He's a special fighter, and like, what a difference 11 months make, right? Because I think back in January, Chuck, everyone was like, maybe this guy has a lot of holes and isn't as great as we all thought he was. And honestly, there were a couple of people saying, like, is this the curse of the Chuck profile? You know, that was thrown around, fighting nerds, et cetera. But no.
But he made a joke that he was going to go to Dagestan and fix his wrestling. Yeah. I mean, he didn't quite do that, but I will say that you don't see guys make strides like he has too often. I mean, It's when you see it, the transcendent qualities of a fighter sometimes is in that. It's like this magic of like, how did they get so good so fast, or how did they improve this so fast? There's something inexplicable about that. And I feel like he's got that, man. Like, he's got this strange, you know, just command of situations that you're like, how far can he take this? And I mean, I hate making all the time when you see a guy come up the Conor McGregor comparison, but PT was talking about that. I kind of see that in that sense. Like, he just kind of has something more to him, you know, that he brings to the table. And so you mentioned all those matchups, and I'm like, they all become a lot of fun when you have a guy like that involved. They become, like, the magnitude of that fight is going to be big regardless of who it is.
Guys, they've announced some news and notes here. The gate, 4.7 million. The attendance, 18,000. They called it a sellout at T-Mobile Arena, which would be great considering, you know, it was the bantamweight title and the flyweight title on the line. Dana White at the post-fight press conference, he's speaking, or was speaking moments ago. He is still maintaining that it was an injured shoulder for one Alex Pantoja. I don't know how that's possible, but I guess maybe if the shoulder moves a certain way, then
maybe injured that as well. I don't know.
Maybe, yeah. He said this regarding Merab Dvalishvili, one of the toughest fighters that I've ever come across. Merab and I didn't get off on the right foot early on. I have nothing but respect for him. So it sounds like they are on the same page now. Josh Van, by the way, saying, I want to fight at least 3 times a year, every year. We might even go up to 4 or 5 times. Did you not learn anything from Merab tonight?
Come on, man.
I mean, golly.
He's a lot younger. I mean, he could do it.
He can make that in fairness, yeah.
By the way, Dana White also saying that the medical team popped Pantoja's shoulder back while he was backstage. And that, again, it was not his elbow. So I don't know what that means. I mean, they popped it.
That means that Dom Cruise was right. I mean, that...
Yeah. I mean, again, but also this is the same guy, by the way, who was telling us that Aspinall was going to be back right away and that all was good. So yeah. I don't know. He did say he does not expect a Pantoja to be back anytime soon, and he expects Van will likely defend the title before any rematch with Pantoja.
So he didn't say Pantoja didn't want to fight, no? Didn't just say...
It sounds like he did not say that. No.
Pantoja didn't want to fight, man. What can I tell you, guys? Van's a new champion.
I gotta tell you what, PT. My son Walter, who has started to watch these fights with me, which is a lot of fun at 11 years young, was locked in on Jan Błachowicz versus Bogdan Guskov and Chuck, you'll appreciate this. He was pulling for Jan because he said, quote, he reminds me of Nikola Jokic. He said he says he just doesn't seem to care about how he looks and about anything. He's just going out there for the love of the game. Yeah, there was something there.
Yeah.
I was magic. Jan fight was magic, man.
Yeah.
He had a horrible second round, then he came back in the third. I mean, brilliant fight. Lovely.
Like, and also, it felt like they were trying to, like, you know, build Bogdan off his back. And he was like, not tonight, guys.
Yeah.
He is ageless. 42, man. Unbelievable. And Ariel, did you notice before that fight, they were like, oh, and he's not lifting weights anymore. I was like, yeah, he's 42, man. He's not doing shit. Yeah,
chill out.
He's showing up to beat the shit out of this young fella. That's all he is doing. That is what his focus is.
We joked that it'd be a draw on the crack, and it ended up being a draw. I just wanted to point that out.
In the end, it was scored a draw. One judge, by the way, scored it 29-28, as you see here, for Jan. And then the two others. It was interesting. The scorecards, I thought, were interesting because... Oh, I lost it there. I was trying to read it. Can I see that one more time? Sorry, guys. Yeah, there it is. So the 10-8. In the second, as you see two judges, I thought, you never know. Like, again, the 10-8s are so tough. Did you guys have any issues with those? As you see, Chris Lee didn't score at a 10-8. And then I was wondering if they were going to score the third a 10-8. They were talking about that as well. I don't know. What did you think? Did Jan deserve this, or was the draw the fair thing, Chuck?
No, I could see it either way. I had no problem with it being a draw. So I feel like in the end it wasn't too controversial. In some ways, a fight like that, like, it feels just to end that. I don't know why, but it was that close.
As far as the prelims were concerned, yes, PT, tell me.
Ben, folks, this fight was how I learned Jan is somehow still number 5 and ain't won a fight since 2022.
Wow.
That says that something about the light heavyweight division.
I mean, there's a couple there's some draws in there and stuff, but right, because he had the draw in the title fight as well. But yes, these things do happen. Okay, what about the prelims, guys? What about the prelims? Grant Dawson, Manuel Torres with a very impressive knockout in the first round. 2 minutes and 25 seconds. Chris Duncan and Terrence Legend. McKinney fought in one of the most frenetic 2 minutes and 30 seconds that you will ever see. First, it looks like McKinney's about to knock him out. Then it looks like Duncan's about to knock him out. Then it looks like they're both about to knock out each other. And in the end, Duncan scores the submission, but it looked for a Darce choke, by the way, or Anaconda choke, excuse me. Yeah. It looked like McKinney was just kind of, I don't know, it looked like he was gassed after that craziness. Yeah. I mean, that was wild stuff. Total strikes 57 for McKinney, 75 for Duncan in 2 minutes.
Fucking and one round of fight. Half a round
not
of
even,
fight.
Not even a half a round.
Oh, man, my God.
This kid, this Duncan guy, unbelievable, right? So everyone's talking, like, that's talking about this fight this week is like, yeah, like the fear is McKinney's going to knock him out, but we don't know if you can knock Chris Duncan out is the thing. Right. So it's like this guy could exhaust himself trying to punch Duncan out. And then, as we've seen, Duncan's on a tear at the moment. He's been brushing up his submission skills with Dustin Poirier at ATT. He's used as a sparring partner in a lot of his later camps. I mean, he is just on one hell of a run right now. Incredible story. As he's pointed out, we did a piece with him for Uncrowned last year. And, you know, this guy starts, he weighs in for his first fight and gets a phone call to say his mother's died. And then he goes and competes the next day. He also was going to be a shepherd, like a dude standing on a mountain herding sheep in Scotland before he found fighting. Like, that takes a certain kind of tough to do that shit. So I'm here for Chris Duncan. My Celtic brother, very happy to see him get that win.
Oh, yeah. No, unbelievable. And like you said, incredible story, and I was blown away by his story when he was on the show a few months back. Really, really impressive guy. Very easy to root for. Macy Barber, Karine Silva was that other fight that I mentioned. Mark Smith, the referee, had a mare in because there was a clear illegal shot to a downed opponent that was just sort of ignored once again, and the classic stern warning, but nothing actually done. Macy Barber gets
and
the
he
win.
Said she something was, like, "You, it glanced you," or something like he was like,
"Yeah." And I caught her
very
right
weird.
In the fucking chin.
Yeah.
It was crazy. Yeah.
She gets the win. She's very emotional. She's been through a lot as of late, a lot of health issues. And, you know, she's on this run. I have a stat here that I wanted to read if I can find it. Do I have it? Oh, I just clicked on the wrong thing. Should have had that prepared. Total mare here. Oh, stop. Here it is.
Mark Smith levels.
Look, nine wins, tied for second most ever in the women's flyweight division behind the champion Valentina Shevchenko. Wild, but it just seems like the inactivity kind of puts her out of the mix. But maybe they'll give her a title shot. Who knows? I mean, we thought Natalia Silva was going to fight for the belt, and now she's fighting Rose Namajunas, as the boss likes to call her, after Alexa Grasso pulled out. I can't get over that one. I don't know why I keep
doing it.
But shout out to her for coming back. Farez Ziam gets the buzzer beater at the end of the second round. He TKOs Nassim Sadikhov, who had looked good in his last fight. Very good for Farez Ziam of France, getting the big win in the second round. What else happened? Bruno Ferreira beat Marvin Vettori. He did miss weight by 3 pounds, I do believe it was, and he gets the win. So I guess maybe if this was KSW, it would have ended in a draw. They would have taken a point away, right? just saying.
Something like that.
What about Jalen Turner, guys? He retires out of the blue, 30 years young, back in March, comes back, has a tremendous win over Edson Barbosa, looked phenomenal. His post-fight interview was great as well. Really great stuff. Barbosa obviously getting up there in age, 24 and 14 now is his record. But Jalen Turner was someone that I think a lot of us were very high on as a lightweight. And I think now he's finally, you know, hopefully on the right track and is going to realize that potential. It's great to see him back. Great to see him win. Great to see the emotion as well. I'm gonna butcher this one. Ivo Baranovsky. Yeah?
Ivo Baranovsky, yes.
Against Ibo Aslan. What was that?
Yes.
What was that? That was insane. That was madness.
Ivo v. Ibo, yeah. It was
quite did you guys see this fight?
And it was absolutely insane. There was so many good fights on the prelims, honestly. Just absolute wars. And this was mental. DC was still in the throes of this fight when the main card was beginning. He was still like, do you remember that fight earlier on today?
Yeah.
It was insane.
just a minute, 29 seconds. The Pride of Poland, Baranowski gets
could
the
be
win.
Irish,
there
though,
you
couldn't
see
he?
Him. He looks, he yeah, Irish, he does yeah. have that certain je ne sais quoi. Mansoor Abdul Malik gets the submission win, a minute, 9 seconds. So the fights were ending rather quickly. And then in the curtain jerker, Myron Santos gets the third round TKO for Muhammad Naimov. So a lot of finishes there. I think like seven of the first 9 fights were some kind of stoppage. A very fun fight card. Any performance you want to call out, Chuck?
What did you guys think about the fights they announced?
Oh, did you want to go those? There? Wow.
Yeah, I mean,
okay. Is this a final thought?
No. I was just curious because they threw those
well,
out
let me
there.
Tell the people about the fights that
okay.
they announced.
Yeah.
324 prelims. We already knew about the 324 main card, right? But we didn't know about the prelims. Some new fights added to the prelims. They officially announced Natalia Silva versus Rose Namajunas. They added Nikita Krylov versus Modestus Bukauskas. Alex Perez versus Charles Johnson, Michael Johnson versus Alex Hernandez, Josh Hokit versus Denzel Freeman, and Ricky Tercios versus Cameron Smotherman. That was the 324 prelim. And then the other fights that they announced were for 325. They really filled up that card. That's the following week, January 31st in the United States, February 1st in Sydney, Volkanovski Lopez. But then we found out a bunch of other fights. Co-main event, Dan Hooker coming back relatively quickly against BSD. What a fight that is. Yeah. Rafael Fiziev against Mauricio Huffy.
I love that one.
Yeah. Tai Tuivasa versus Tyson Teixeira. And then Jimmy Crute versus Dustin Jacoby. The prelims feature Quilin Salkeld versus Rongju, Sergey Spivak versus Antti Delia, Jonathan Mikhaf versus Oban Elliott, Khan Ofli versus Yiza, Junior Tafa versus Billy Elikana, Cam Rouston versus Cody Brundage, and Jacob Malkoon versus Torres Finney. What caught your eye here?
Jesus well, like, Christ.
I mean, they're good fights. I just, it was just kind of the delivery of like, hey, Hunter's leaning my ear here and he's telling me, you know, what it felt like very pro wrestling or something. Like, hey, it sounds like we got something happening here, you know.
Well, listen, but Chuck. I mean, yeah. And by the way, yesterday we had a press conference in which they just announced Charles Oliveira versus versus Max Holloway for the BMF. That's the March pay-per-view, March 7th, I do believe it is. I'll take anything, absolutely anything, over an IG Live where Dana is mispronouncing the names in between bites of a sandwich. Like, I'll take anything. So if that's what we're getting, if that's what it is, I'll take it. You know?
Yeah. Good fights, though.
That was your take on the fights.
I loved that.
What are you, Ariel Helwani?
Yes.
I was reading down all the.
You read out.
Yeah. 15 fucking.
When you were reading them, I was going, "What fucking fight is he talking about here?"
Yeah. These are all... Oban. By the way, some exciting news. Dana White said that they are looking into going to Asia for Tyra versus potentially Van. Japan, in particular, was mentioned.
Wow.
So, that would be nice, right? That would be nice.
Yeah.
Listen, this is the thing. I was thinking about this, like and we could get into it next week as well, but like they announced the London card and it's a fight night. But now that everything's on Paramount Plus, why can't they do, let's just say Tom gets magically better. It's not going to happen, but like, why can't Tom Aspinall headline that, right? Why can't you do a fight night in Japan headlined by Tyra versus Van or something like that? We don't have
to just don't listen. If it's going to be 5 o'clock in the morning, I don't want to fucking do it. Okay. Don't do it in London. I was at the Manchester one. Fuck
no,
off
no.
That shit.
No. I'm saying because it's Paramount Plus and you don't have to sell a paper.
Right.
It could be at any time of the day now. You can't use that as an excuse anymore. You can't say
they will.
Oh, pay-per-view.
They will use it as an excuse.
You think Watch so?
Them. No.
It's gonna happen.
Right. I feel like we're gonna be in a new era that way. We'll see though. I don't want to get your hopes up.
That's true. Was there a performance that you wanted to call out there from the prelims, PT, or did you just want to
Chris
talk about
Chris Duncan? Already did.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right.
Put some respect on his
beforehand
name.
Too.
100%.
Nobody's gonna out berserk that guy. No, that dude is. That was crazy. He was standing in there, just standing, like biting down on it. That was great.
I'm just seeing some more stuff. Dana White reacting to Tom Aspinall's comments on a certain program that he was disappointed. In his reaction.
Is that how the person said to him? Yeah, Tom.
I'm not seeing. Yeah. Let's see if you guys cite. the program. The quote is, "What did I say? We have people all over him right now checking up on him. I'm no doctor. I'm just saying what I've heard. I wasn't saying anything negative towards him." My question is, did those people check up on him before the interview or after the interview? This,
I mean,
they were apparently there in that hospital. That's what I was, you know.
That's right. That's right.
Right, people, the video, the many were there. Videos they had around they had the their hospital. Notebooks. Again, you know.
Oh, there's all kinds of comments here about the Ali Act. I don't want. Wow, there's a lot of stuff here. Golly,
did you see that hearing? That was interesting.
Yeah. I think.
Why don't you recap it for us here, PT? Give us.
PT, give us a recap of that Congress hearing.
This is fucking great. I don't know what the big deal is. And then someone was like, "Hang on a second, this you know, he's a bit of trouble there." And they were like, "Oh, don't worry about that." So that was pretty much what happened.
It is worth noting that this is the final UFC on ESPN pay-per-view, the final UFC pay-per-view, and I guess Dana White was asked about the pay-per-view points, and he said there is a model in place, and they have it figured it out. They have figured it out, and everyone just, you know, just relax.
Thank
just
God
relax.
For that. Say all the champions are like, thank God for that. There was me worrying like, oh,
there's a model in place.
My wages are going, and they're like, they have it sorted now. Don't worry, darling. It's going to be fine. Dana White's just said, it's sorted. And she's like, oh, thank God. You know?
We're all good. We're all good. So there you have it, guys. And now at this point in the program, 2:26 a.m. Eastern Time, 7:26 a.m., I wanted to go around the room and all talk about our top 10 favorite UFC pay-per-views of all time. But the key is, and I asked you guys to prepare this, so thank you. I want you guys to give us the numbered event date as well, and run down the main card. So please, PT, why don't you go first?
The only two people who can do this. You're the only fucking two people in the world are like, oh, what was that?
I was going to say, Earl could probably actually do this.
Go ahead, PT, why don't you tell us?
No, fuck off. No, we're going to bed. Come on.
Chuck is 100% going to bring up the fact that Dana White promised that he was going to rappel off the Mandalay Bay.
Did on Friday.
Bungee jump.
Yeah, that's his favorite. Oh, bungee. Was it bungee or rappel?
I'm still pissed about it. I wanted to see that.
That and UFC 149 in Calgary saying he owed them a better card. Remember that
Chuck
one?
He's going to be on his deathbed. And we're like, imagine just saying, he's like, he didn't do it. He
you
still
promised didn't us. Do it. He didn't. Did it, did he didn't bungee jump. Did Chuck, any final thoughts before we go? Anything you want to say?
Fellas, I was just going to say that we've seen a lot of eras come and go, and this one feels like a particularly big one. You know, you go back to like Spike days and remember Ion or whatever that was, like all the different places that the fights have appeared. This felt like the first significant era. You know, the Fox one was still a feel out. I felt like this was the arrival to when the UFC kind of entered into that mainstream consciousness of the sports fan, and it really has played out especially across the pandemic and just with everything that's gone on. But we're in another one of these moments where you're closing the chapter, and it's always kind of crazy when we arrive at these, because we've been following the sport for a long time. And Ariel, I know you were there at the like when ESPN you know, first was getting the rights for the UFC. I was there before then. I can remember talking to ESPN executives back in the days, being like, hey, can we do more coverage, or like this, just the people above me? And it was such a struggle. It's a crazy thing that we've reached the end of another one of these big deals, and we're going into a new era, which we don't know what it means. I feel like we're the only sport that kind of goes through these more drastic changes, you know what I mean, than other sports, because when they go to other broadcasts or whatever, yeah, there might be little bells and whistles, but you always feel like when we go into a new chapter, it is truly a new chapter. It's going to be a completely different, you know, setup in terms of the pay-per-views and all that. But we made it again, and we're here to talk about it. So I just wanted to kind of acknowledge that, man, because we were all there for the ESPN things. Felt like a big one to me.
And by the way, when you mentioned the word Ion, was that in reference to the network that aired the prelims for UFC 125?
Yeah. Remember, it was like they would like
resolution. On Ion TV. Was that what that was? Was that a subtle nod?
He just sent them down. He's going to start doing the dance now. Oh, And who main evented that card? It was
Maynard Edgar. Maynard Edgar, remember?
I don't care. I don't fucking care.
The rematch, which of course ended in a draw, just like the draw that we had in the Jan Błachowicz fight. And by the way, the Lamont Roach fight against Pitbull Cruz tonight in San Antonio. See how it all comes together, guys.
Yeah. This is how you do it, PC. This is how you
both put on it there. Thanks very much, everyone, for tuning in.
Yes, there it is. But yes, thank you for that. That is true. I found myself a little emotional tonight, not going to lie. And of course, who's to check? It was Ariel Helwani and New York Rick who ushered in the UFC on ESPN era back in December of 2018. But, you know, we'll talk about that story in the book. Don't worry about it, guys. We appreciate everyone who tuned in on this lovely December evening or morning, wherever you may be. Thank you very much for your support. Please give us a thumbs up, like, subscribe, all that stuff and more. Thumbs up to the chat. Thumbs up to the whole crew back in New York City. You know, we never do this, by the way. Can we get a shot of the crew? Where's the crew? I want to see who's in the control room. Can we do that? Or is that...
They are.
Wow. They're still there. Look at these guys.
Hi-oh.
Burning the midnight oil. I love it. Much love, much love. You know what? Conspicuous by his absence, Frank in that shot. Don't see Frank in there. Don't see him. That's weird.
Good looking.
Sounds like the home studio microphone there, Frank.
There you go.
thank you very much, everyone, back at the HQ. Great job by the boys in the back. Another watch party in the book. Final UFC on ESPN pay-per-view watch party, but for those asking, we'll still be doing the watch parties for the numbered events. So have no fear, have no fear. The next one, though, will come in January of 2026. Wow. We'll be back on Monday to talk about everything that happened tonight, all the news that's coming out of the press conferences, and of course, talk to the big winners Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. You know the drill by now. Okay, I think the song is about to wrap up. The boys are tired. I'm tired. Congrats to all the winners. Much love. Thank you for watching. We'll talk to you on Monday. Peace.